This is Understanding Israel-Palestine Beyond the Walls. I'm Margo Patterson, the producer of this week's show. As this show was being finalized, a march of Jewish nationalists through occupied East Jerusalem on June 15th had led to protests by Palestinians, the launching of incendiary balloons by Hamas in Gaza, and new Israeli airstrikes on Gaza. In other news, over 16,000 artists have signed a letter condemning Israel's attack on Gaza in May and denouncing the country's apartheid system. They include 6 Academy Award winners and 8 Pulitzer Prize winners. The letter calls on other countries to cut trade, economic, and cultural relations with Israel. A 15-year-old boy was killed by Israeli forces last week as he and others in the West Bank town of Beita demonstrated against an illegal Jewish settler outpost on a strategic mountain close to town. Mohammed Hamayel was the 4th protester in Beita to be killed during 5 weeks of consecutive protests against the new outpost, which threatens the livelihoods of more than 100 people who harvest olives on land they've owned for generations. Hamayel was killed by live ammunition fired at point-blank range, according to an eyewitness. The health ministry reports 6 protesters were also shot and wounded with live fire at the protest. Dozens of others were injured by rubber-coated steel bullets and tear gas inhalation. Now to today's topic. Israel's push to extend and consolidate settlements in East Jerusalem, particularly in the Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood, triggered the war in May between Israel and Hamas. The hostilities have come to an end, but not the turmoil in Jerusalem. Activists say a violent crackdown by the police is part of an effort to stifle dissent over the ousting of Palestinian families from their homes. Here to talk to us about what's going on in Jerusalem and in other parts of Israel are Liel, Megan, and Tariq Nassar of the Israel-Palestine Center for Research and Information, an Israeli-Palestinian NGO formed in 1988 to build bridges between Israeli and Palestinian communities. 33 years later, it is still doing that. It's adopted a new name, the Israel-Palestine Center for Regional Initiatives, but kept its acronym and its focus on Israeli-Palestinian transboundary partnerships. It has several projects in Jerusalem that bring Palestinians and Israelis together to work on common problems. Tariq and Liel, welcome to the program. Liel, you are co-director of the center. Tariq, you're an architect and urban planner who is director of planning programs at the center. Tell us what's going on in Jerusalem. What are you seeing? Are tensions as high as they were before the hostilities in May?
Thanks for having us. It's my pleasure to be working with Liel for a couple of years in Jerusalem mainly, and right now we're trying to expand in even on the regional level. Jerusalem, it's a very complicated situation, and I think what we're seeing now, it's the results of neglecting the areas of East Jerusalem neighborhood from 1967 when the Israeli government occupied the eastern side in the Six-Days War. You know, over 55 years of neglection, those areas became, you know, very dense areas and a lot of informal settlements and areas in East Jerusalem neighborhood, which people, they are living really in very dense urban cities. The living conditions there, it's very hard. And I think the Israeli government, they're trying to take over more and more of lands and houses in East Jerusalem. And I think everyone knows that it's all about the demographic ratio and how to control the demographic ratio between East and West. Right now, it's continuing in Sheikh Jarrah trying to take over those areas where the Palestinians living in East Jerusalem and many other areas in Silwan as well, a neighborhood. Both people, they want really to live. But I think it's more about the politicians who's really getting the benefits of such conflict and situation like that here. I'm living in East Jerusalem. I'm Palestinian in East Jerusalem. And I see, like, on the community level, people really want to live. I don't know if Liel want to add something.
Yeah, thank you very much, Tariq. Like, I would just add that in 1967, where the eastern side of Jerusalem, Palestinian Jerusalem, was occupied, or Jordanian Jerusalem was occupied, Israel annexed the eastern side, but did not give citizenship to the local residents. What was created was a complex bureaucratic situation where the land were annexed, but the people were just given a temporary residency. And since then, the people in Jerusalem suffer from discrimination that is created because of that status. Part of this discrimination, first of all, is that there is no clear master plan of Jerusalem, especially for the East neighborhoods. And this creates many buildings to be declared as illegal and being under the danger of being demolished. This is why people are living also in dense areas, because they are not allowed to build new neighborhoods or new buildings. But specifically in the neighborhoods that are more historical, we see a phenomenon where right-wing groups supported by the Israeli governments, but also by American taxpayers' money that is supporting charities that support this phenomena, they try to move into the historical neighborhoods of Jerusalem by advocating for different reasons. The first one is by saying that the buildings were owned by Jewish people before the 1948 war, the war of the creation of the Israeli state. And now the Jewish people are going back to their homes. And this is the situation that's happening in Sheikh Jarrah, but also in Silwan, which both of them are the neighborhoods that are closest to the old city. But another reasons that they're using is by declaring an area a religious space, like Shimon HaTzadik tomb in Sheikh Jarrah, or like a few different areas that were declared as the Gardens of David in Silwan, in the southern part of the old city. And the third option was declaring an area as important for security reasons or for public buildings. By this, we see a phenomenon of more and more people being evicted from their homes or getting ordered to be evicted. And they, on their side, are arguing that they were living in those neighborhoods for many years, that they don't have any alternative. They would like to ask for alternative solution from the government, but the government is not really giving them one. This created a conflict in those areas where people are evicted and those that try to get in. Interestingly, specifically in Silwan and Sheikh Jarrah, is that these Jewish extremist movements are bringing people to move in to the buildings of that were declared under the ownership of Jewish families before 1948, while the Palestinians themselves have houses or have property that is in the western side of the city, in the Jewish side of the city, but they are not allowed to return for different nationalistic reasons of maintaining the areas as Jewish, or by saying that this can harm the neighborhood. So this is another discriminatory policy that enable Jewish organizations to acquire property for historical reasons, but doesn't allow Palestinians to do the same. If we're speaking specifically about the question that you gave regarding the tensions, I agree with Tarek. The majority of the people that live in Jerusalem want to live in peace and to have better quality of life. But these movements create tension in those neighborhoods that eventually bring also the police and also the demonstrators in. And then the quality of life within those neighborhoods deteriorate, and there are more clashes, more tensions, and it's more difficult to live in those areas. And specifically in Sheikh Jarrah, where our center is, we see there is difficulty to reach the center, to enter to the neighborhood, or to maintain the ongoing reality that was before this new wave of clashes that was created over the past few months.
The website called The National quoted Danny Seideman yesterday in an article talking about the Israeli police. Danny Seideman is the founder of Terrestrial Jerusalem, a well-known Israeli NGO that tracks developments in Jerusalem. And it quotes him saying, "This is not the Israeli police that we know. This is different." My question is, the repression of the last few weeks different or not particularly so, in your opinion?
That's a very good question, to tell you the truth, because I had this question 2 weeks ago as well from a journalist, a local journalist from Tel Aviv. Yes, I see some changes, actually, and it makes sense, because in order to make the whole area, it's like more coming down and life to get back normally, the existence of police needs to be decreased in East Jerusalem neighborhood. Especially that East Jerusalemites, they see the police, the Israeli police inside their neighborhoods, as they are not actually for protecting them. They don't see them as a protection. It's a protection for them. They see them as against them, or, you know, like as an occupation, because there is no other police, you know, just Israeli. But for the last, let's say, 2 weeks, we see police cars not entering that much of East Jerusalem neighborhood, which we used to see them a lot before the war, let's say, the last war. between Hamas and I don't know if I call it with the Israeli government or with just Bibi Netanyahu. But yeah, before 2 weeks, it used to be like a lot of police cars entering. For the last 2 weeks, we see the decrease of police cars entering the neighborhood, which really makes big difference because Israel's Smart neighborhood, you know, like residents there, as I said, they don't see them as a protection. They see them as occupation. And at the same time, when you need them, you don't find them. For example, right now we're doing a huge park in Wadi Jouz. It's one of the neighborhoods to the northern part of the old city. It's in really very close to the implementation phase right now. And we did some kind of public participation with the community around this park that will be created. And I remember one of the residents, he said, even if you put cameras there and there is any problem, if we call the police, nobody will come. I said, you're right. Actually, it happened to me even. I don't know if I answered your question, but yeah, there is a decrease of...
Well, do you think the decrease is meant to de-escalate the situation, or is it to leave violence in the hands of the settlers, you know, to give settlers a free hand?
I don't think that to leave the settlers in to do, you know, like things. No, I think the police here, they are smart. They're playing between, you know, the black and white all the time and the spectrum between black and white. And they saw that there is a huge tension for the last 2 weeks. And in order to reduce the tension in East Jerusalem, especially the resistance of the youth in East Jerusalem, the Palestinian East Jerusalem, they needed to decrease the police cars inside neighborhoods. This is what I feel. I'm from East Jerusalem, by the way.
Can I add something? It's important to see it in the light of our project. One of the projects that we developed was also bringing different activists that work with us in the different task forces to other areas of conflict, other cities in the center of conflict, to learn what was done over there. So it's been 5 years already that we bring delegations from Jerusalem to Belfast, Northern Ireland. And over there, we can see that one of the most important lessons was a reform that was made in the police. In order for the people not to feel that the police is an offensive force that tries to control their lives, but a representative force that tries to improve their quality of life. In Belfast specifically, the police changed completely their uniforms, their symbols, the proportion of people working in the police from the different sides. They changed the armory of their cars and they changed their weapons. The people working in the police became people that are representative of different communities and that they come from the neighborhoods themselves. Not only this, an auditing board from representatives from the different neighborhoods was created in order to oversee the police. Over all of this is not happening, unfortunately, in Jerusalem. In Jerusalem, we see a militarization of the police. The police is becoming more armored with more developed weapons and more shielded cars. Unfortunately, we see police officers that are not coming from Jerusalem, and the police themselves are not coming from the different neighborhoods of Jerusalem. This creates an antagonism from the local people towards the police. And we see all across the board, Jews and Arabs, Haredi ultra-Orthodox populations, or complete seculars, all of them had clashes with the police over the last year. All of them had incidents of the police becoming too violent towards them. And all of them is because the police is taking steps that are very violent towards the local population. The arrests are very aggressive. The most important thing is that there is no clear independent body to monitor the behavior of the police forces. So the different groups in Jerusalem, no matter their backgrounds, are advocating for reform in the police. And I hope that the reform that will be adopted in the future will be in light of what happened in other areas of conflict. In our projects in Jerusalem, especially in the eastern side, we can see that if you give the local people in East Jerusalem, in the Palestinian neighborhood, the agency to take care of their life, they are doing the best job possible, even a lot better than the municipality or the police or the governmental services. All the task forces that we work with, whether in time of emergency or in time of peace, we can see that people, if they have the resources and they are empowered, they are listening to the local population. They can answer in time of need. What we need in Jerusalem, I feel, is to decentralize the different services and decentralize the idea of law and order. So what will happen is that people will create their own security instead of security being imposed externally.
there are certainly many analogies between what you're talking about and the conversations that are going on in this country too about possible ways to reimagine policing. I want to ask you about something else. During the 11-day war, intercommunal violence broke out between Jewish and Palestinian citizens of Israel, particularly in some Israeli cities known for mixed communities. Mobs of Arab Israelis and Jewish Israelis began beating up on each other. This hasn't been seen in Israel since its founding. How do you regard the violence that took place, and what are your concerns about what it might portend?
This is a very important question. We like to say in Jerusalem that Jerusalem is the introduction to what will happen in the rest of the country. And since 2014, we are saying that if the radical right-wing movements would not be dismantled, they will eventually impact the delicate relationships between Jews and Arabs all across the country. And what we've seen over the last months is that different radical extremist groups from both sides infiltrated into the mixed cities and created tensions and changed the balance of the relationship between the communities. We've seen movements that are nationalistic from the Palestinian side, but we've seen also right-wing groups that used to work in the settlements across the West Bank or in East Jerusalem, going in buses to the different mixed cities and having right-wing demonstrations in different Arab areas. This is something that never existed in Israel, but is something that is organized, planned, and funded by the government, but also, again, by American taxpayer money, that by tax deduction to these groups or by sending them donations, they support the idea of Judaization of different spaces. These movements create small community centers, fully focused on Jewish people and Judaizing mixed areas. But also specifically in the last tensions, they organized and funded buses coming from Judea and Samaria, specifically from Samaria, into Lod, into Jaffa, into Haifa, in order to supposedly secure and defend the Jewish areas, but instead taking arms and taking the ownership and sovereignty of power to their hands and exercising violence as retaliation, as vengeance. And we've seen in the WhatsApp groups and in the Telegram groups and Facebook groups, groups that are organized specifically for attacking Arabs or specifically for attacking Jews from people that are not living in those mixed cities. And this is important to know because the people that are living together are kind of used to each other and they know how to talk with each other and they created kind of balance of relations, which is not coexistence, it's not equal, it's still problematic, but it's on signs of improvement. And instead of it from the outside, there were groups coming in to harm it. Now you're asking me about the future. I think we have two choices here. If we want to solve the systemic problems that create these tensions, that create these groups to be created, this will happen again and maybe will happen worse. There are kids that don't have good education, that are poor, that are neglected in the afternoon, and these right-wing groups are taking them and mobilize them to become a part of this phenomenon. On the other hand, we can see a new movement of activities coming up all across the country in order to respond to this wave of violence. We can see a surge of organizations that try to do bi-national, bi-communal work. We can see conferences. We can see the growth of movements like Standing Together, which is a shared movement. We can see new centers that are being opened. And we can see also a very high demand for shared activities. It's a question now, what will come up? Since 2014 in Jerusalem, we saw as well a surge of activities that try to bring the communities together. And tensions were a bit decreased since 2014, but this happened again this year. So it's a question where the government will put its focus. And I hope that the new government in Israel will put a focus on relieving the tensions and creating better living conditions for all instead of intensifying the nationalistic tensions, and by this bring us to another wave of violence in a few years.
Thank you, Liel, for speaking to the role of outside extremists in these riots, and especially clarifying for listeners that Americans play a role in that. Tariq, do you want to add anything to that?
I think I totally agree with Liel, what he said. At the same time, I want to add something I think is very important, which is most of Arab towns and Arab cities in Israel, which is, they are different than East Jerusalemites, because as Liel mentioned, East Jerusalemites, Palestinian, they have a permanent residency status. They don't have the Israeli citizenship. And Arab Israeli, like the Arab Palestinians inside Israel cities, they witnessed the neglecting for the last, let's say, a decade in all those areas, the vandalism and the murders and, family conflict and shootings between families, it's increased significantly. And I think this is a kind of the results of the neglecting of those cities in Israel as an Arab areas. I see a lot of changes in all in the voices of Arab Israeli now inside Israel. I mean, they are more like towards the Palestinian side. They want to talk more about, you know, the Palestinian National Authority. They witnessed that the Israeli government neglecting them for over, I don't know, like 50, over 70 years, let's say now, because they have been under the Israeli government from 1948-49, let's say. So I think in this clashes between Arabs and Jews inside Israel, and even though in the mixed cities, part of it comes from the Arabs in those areas, they want to voice out. They had this kind of, okay, we want to voice out. We want to talk. We want to protest and to demonstrate. And so I think what we need as I totally agree with Liel, and I'm part of this kind of doer terminology and approach, is instead of talk, it's do things. For example, I'm going to take Jerusalem here. In Jerusalem, it's a little bit it's different than other areas. But Jerusalem, where we found that what we need really more than hope there is action. Because when you have actions and a better living conditions and trying to give hope to the youth by real development, not fake development, hope will follow. Otherwise, it's just you know, like waiting for the problem to come up again and the conflict to come up again. I don't know if Liel want to add something, but
I just saying that for ending is that we in the Sintra Center that we opened, we saw that environment, urban farming, and green open spaces is something that really can bring people together. And in area of conflict and in area that created a lot of destruction, we try to really create life by growing food together and by helping women to find job and generate income through growing food, also creating a co-op cafe.
I am sorry to break in, but we have just so few minutes left. I'd like to ask you two more questions if I could. One is,
please.
The Israel-Palestine Center for Research and Information began in 1988, founded by Gershon Vaskin, a well-known peace activist, founded during a time when I think people were more optimistic about peace. The center's emphasis on Israelis and Palestinians being equal partners in IPCRI was part of that idealism. I visited the center when I was in Jerusalem in 2002, during the second Intifada, and found people there very helpful, but also speaking very realistically about the difficulties of not only making peace between Israeli and Palestinian people, but having truly collaborative relations between Israelis and Palestinians as individuals. Partnership is still very much the raison d'etre of your organization. What are the challenges? And do you think the challenges today are different from what they once were?
Interesting. I would like first to say that when the organization was established, it wasn't more optimistic times. We're speaking about 1988, throughout the first Intifada, where the word Palestine could not be declared in Israel. And as a matter of fact, the organization couldn't be registered because it mentioned the word Palestine, or because it mentioned the fact that it's partnership between Israelis and Palestinians. So in 1988, the situation was worse in our ability to recognize the other side within the Israeli system. During the 1990s, the organization, especially after the beginning of the Oslo process, it moved into focusing on peace building education and bringing groups from different ages to learn about the other side, until the eruption of the Second Intifada, which, like you said, brought questions about our ability to impact the societies in large, while the governments are refraining from making the important compromises for making a systemic peace arrangement, so then the people can follow. Since 2002, the organization tried to work on different levels, mainly by creating trust between policymakers on both sides through track two efforts. And in the last 7 years, we are trying to work with communities on the ground with a focus on actions that will bring people together and will create new relations. You're talking in general about the reality, and I must say that we are entering into an era that people are more and more forced to live together. And I'm saying this because the premise around peace since the 1990s was the idea that we can separate the people. We can separate the people of Jerusalem to two cities. We can separate the people of the country to two states. We can think of division and divorce as the right solution. And with time, we've seen that this becomes more and more impossible. People are more forced to live together, more forced to recognize the other side. And this brings new problems to the table. People were sure they will be able to create a reality without the other side. And now they are being forced to understand that they can't. And this brings, on the one hand, a surge of extremist right-wing groups that try to advocate for this solution while neglecting the whole idea of human rights or equality in the space. This was what brought the nation state law in Israel, for example, or what in Jerusalem brings the Jewish extremist groups to enter to Palestinian neighborhoods with the idea they can Judaize them. But on the other hand, a surge of organizations that understand that our future is a future that is shared, and we need to create better relations. And instead of having two offices, one in Tel Aviv and one in Ramallah, we should have one shared office in Jerusalem. Instead of thinking that we should work separately, each organization on its own people, we understand more and more that we need to model transboundary partnerships. We need to model the idea of living together in an equal basis. First in our office or our projects or our streets, then in the different parties or coalitions as we see today, and then eventually maybe in two people living side by side throughout the whole country in equal basis. All of this is a framework for communal ethnic conflict that need to be solved everywhere in the country. This can determine two-state solution or one-state solution, but for me, it's not really the main question. The main question is how the people can live together with both of them feel secure and equal within a system that recognizes them, their history, and their identity.
Liel and Tarek, thank you. I've been talking to Liel Megan and Tarek Nassar of IPCRI, a joint Israeli-Palestinian NGO in Jerusalem focused on building partnerships and peace. You've been listening to Understanding Israel-Palestine Beyond the Walls on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.